Welcome everyone to episode 129 of the NBA podcast. We have previewed the Eastern Conference side of the first round playoff bracket, so now let's turn our attention to the West. Before we get underway, wanted to remind you that you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA pod. In our bio, you can find our Twitter handle, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes, so please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews. We'd love any feedback. And we're being hosted now on the Almighty Baller Podcast Network. So follow them on Twitter at Almighty Casts. Joining me today, as always, is my very stable genius of a co-host, Morten Jensen. Mort, how's it going? You're going to jinx the Sixers again, you son of a bitch?
Well, it's going great, Brian, because it's physically impossible for me now to find cake in my hair.
Oh, that is true. You are sporting a very nice new look.
Oh, yes. Yes. Very, very limited on top.
Yes. Yeah. In the hair department. Say. Yeah.
Oh, yes. True. I look like Taj Gibson.
You actually do. Yeah.
Yep.
Speaking of Taj Gibson, what a transition, Mort. Well done. Mm-hmm.
I know. It wasn't even planned.
So, yeah, let's dive into the Western Conference playoff bracket, the first round and the first matchup. Thanks to their overtime win over the Denver Nuggets on Wednesday night, the Timberwolves did make it into the playoffs. Their reward, a date with the number one seed Houston Rockets. Congratulations. Lucky you, Timberwolves. Way to break that 14-year playoff drought to get slaughtered. So, I mean, where do we start aside from... Here's something I just continue to be amazed by about this Timberwolves team. I know last year's Timberwolves team had the same issue, but you know, Tom Thibodeau, between his stints in Boston as an assistant coach and in Chicago as a head coach, he was known very much as a defensive minded coach. Those Celtics and those Bulls teams were typically around the top 5 or top 10 in defensive rating. This year, the Timberwolves finished 22nd. They were tied with the Knicks and the Grizzlies in defensive rating. On the flip side, Houston had the league's second best offense, and they actually have a good defense. They finished 6th. So how's that going to go for the Timberwolves?
Not well, Brian.
Hard-hitting analysis. Well. You can't find anywhere else.
Look, no. You have guys who can be difference makers defensively on Minnesota. Yep. Or actually, I made that plural. You have one guy on Minnesota.
There are two.
Well, I mean, Taj is fine, but he's also older and a little bit slower, and I think he's been drained by the minutes load.
Yep.
So it really leaves, like, as a one disruptive defender, Jimmy Butler.
Yep.
Like, Taj will play defense on the interior, and he'll do fine. He'll rotate correctly. He'll even pick up smaller guards on switches and stay with them for a short period of time. And that's fine and dandy, but he's not going to generate a ton of steals. He's not going to generate a ton of blocks. He's not going to steal away possessions like Jimmy is. Yeah. So that's really the one card they have. Two other players who were supposed to be defensive, not defensive minded, but have strong defensive presence, just don't. I mean, Andrew Wiggins and Karl-Anthony Towns are horrific defenders at this stage of their careers, and you might look at their minutes experience for their entire career and go, why aren't they better? And that's a legitimate question. Mm-hmm. It's they should have been better at this point in time. I will say Karl-Anthony Towns has had moments this year where you sort of see it.
Yeah.
And that's encouraging, but it's so not enough.
Right. Yeah, I mean, to your point, let's see where I want to pull up the exact numbers here. Where's Wiggins? I mean, they're technically a little bit better defensively with both of those guys on the court than off, but a little bit better still means they're giving up, for Wiggins, 107.6 points per 100 possessions. Towns is 107.7. Their defense, Jimmy Butler has the best defensive rating of any Timberwolves rotation player. And he's at 105.1, which, if it was extrapolated across the league throughout the whole season, I believe that is 12th. So,
and that's best... why Jimmy is an MVP candidate, or should right. have been, or if he played enough games. Yeah.
So, I mean, it feels like, you know, we talked about the Cavs and the Pacers in the last episode and how the Cavs, their only answer really throughout the playoffs is just going to be, we're going to outscore you. We can't stop you. It feels like that's Minnesota's card in this series. Like, they cannot stop Houston, so you have to outscore them, but Houston actually has a good defense, so that's going to be a problem.
Yeah, but there's another problem, Brian.
What's that?
So, Minnesota takes 7.2 more three-pointers than Houston makes.
Oh my god. That is a good stat.
Wow. So, that's pretty impressive. Minnesota is 30th in three-pointers made and attempted. Uh-huh. Houston is first in made and attempted.
Yep.
So yeah, we got that going for us, Minnesota, and Minnesota is, to their credit, second in the league in free throw percentage and fifth in the league in free throw attempts. So they can make up some ground. They also don't turn the ball over a whole lot, just second in the league. So they're pretty mistake free, but they don't gamble. And when I say gamble, I mean, they don't play dynamic basketball. They don't just spout out a three. Like, everything they do, it has to be coordinated. It has to be like planned. Has to be half court, and I think that's just so draining. Which makes me wonder, like, after they've gotten swept,
right?
Do they actually begin to look at alternatives to replace Tibbs?
Yeah, I mean, so to the draining point, you alluded to this earlier. We've repeatedly cited this in the past couple months, but since Jimmy went down, and even before Jimmy went down, the Timberwolves had one of the most lopsided rotations in the league. Namely, Tibbs doesn't trust their bench at all. So, Wiggins, Karl-Anthony Towns, and Taj Gibson, I believe, all finished among the top 15 in terms of minutes played per game this year.
Every starter played 33 or more minutes.
Yeah. And their Jamal Crawford leads all reserves at 20.7. Then Bielitsa and Tyus Jones and Gorgui Dieng. And now Tibbs is trying to make Derrick Rose a thing, which, no, he should stop.
But he dunked, Brian. He dunked.
Right, and his knees didn't explode when he landed. Yeah. It's a miracle. Yeah, I mean, that's a huge concern, right? Just like they're going to be run into the ground by this point.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Look, I love Jimmy Butler. He is my favorite player just because he's so damn good at everything that he does. Like, legitimately, it's hard to pinpoint a fault in his game, and that's to his credit. But it's just not enough.
Yeah.
And you can talk about Karl-Anthony Towns' ability to score a hell of a lot of points and rebound the basketball at a high rate. That's fine. But again, where's the additional help? Like, Andrew Wiggins shot 64% on free throws this year.
Yeah.
33 from downtown. He was just abysmal offensively, defensively. He was just abysmal all year long. And Jeff Teague was sort of just average, 14.7 assists, 44% from the field. Taj is Taj, like, good, but limited. And the bench, as you alluded to, like, Tibbs doesn't trust. So where's that help going to come from? It's not. These Wolves are the same Wolves as before, and that's not a compliment.
Yeah, like, you would need just monster performances from Butler and Towns for them to have a chance, but Houston has guys. I mean, Capella is going to be, he'll be able to hold his own against Karl-Anthony Towns, at least when they're, if they try to go to the post. And, I mean, God, count the number of wings Houston has. Like, it's tough to stop Jimmy Butler with just one player, but Houston has Trevor Ariza, PJ Tucker. The one thing I do want to mention with Houston is Luke Mbamute, who went out Tuesday with a dislocated shoulder. Do you think they're going to feel the impact of missing him in this series, or is it not really a thing to worry about until a prospective Western Conference Finals with the Warriors?
The latter.
Yeah, I would think so too.
Yeah, that, you know, I don't really need to attach some big time analysis to that. It's just look at the team that Houston has right now, even without Bamute.
Yeah,
they're deep.
Yeah, they're very deep. And so, I mean, Jimmy Butler, you said it, he's a great defender. You can glue him to James Harden the whole series, but whereas that would have given the Rockets, or potentially given the Rockets trouble last year, oh, now they have a guy named Chris Paul who can run the offense, even if Harden is struggling to create for himself and others.
And he would. Like, let's just get that out of the way. If Jimmy Butler did just stick to Harden throughout all minutes that Harden was out there, you would see a downright shitty statistical line from James Harden over the course of a series, because Jimmy is that good. Like, he shot down Harden before in regular season matchups over the course of the last 3 or 4 years. But that's never been the strength, solely, at least, of Houston. It's been the entire component of playing fast and having guys who can run the break, finish lobs, and shoot the three. Like, Gerald Green can actually come into a game and emulate James Harden. Not to the point where he'll generate 35 points and 17 assists, but he can emulate a role. And that's all due to Mike D'Antoni's system, where he has certain guys who can come in and act in a role. I think that's one of the most underrated aspects of this Houston squad. They have these big wings that can all sort of play like one another. So if one goes down, the gap isn't necessarily as huge. The talent might be, but the production isn't.
Yeah, right. I mean, not that Joe Johnson is anywhere near the level of a defender as Mbamute Mute, but him and Gerald Green, what they lack on the defensive end will make up for offensively. Same goes for a guy like Eric Gordon. So, yeah, I mean, it just feels like this Houston team is too damn deep for the Timberwolves. I mean, like, the Timberwolves, and, you know, this criticism goes back again to Tibbs' time in Chicago. Like, they've played their card already. Every team's card in the playoffs is, let's increase our starters' minutes up to the high 30s, low 40s. You know, let's not rely on the bench. The Timberwolves have done that all year. Like, this is the best the Timberwolves are going to be. Like, we haven't seen the Rockets if they go that route, but I don't think they're going to need to, frankly.
No, no, no. They can play. They go Toronto on this one.
Yeah.
Like, just deep.
Yeah.
So, just a question here, and I swear, Wolves fans, I'm not trying to troll, but right now, not future, but right now, who's the better player, Trevor Ariza or Andrew Wiggins? Ooh. The fact that I can even ask that question, though.
Yeah. I mean, it depends on, like, if you put Trevor Ariza in Andrew Wiggins' role, I think Trevor Ariza would struggle as much as Wiggins has. That said, I mean, if you're looking at, like, who would you rather, who do you think can be the starter on a championship team, it's Trevor Ariza, because he knows his role. Like, he's just a 3-and-D guy. Like, he's not, Wiggins wants to fashion himself as this, like, high volume scorer, but his efficiency isn't there. He doesn't contribute enough on defense and and the other aspects of the game, rebounding, playmaking, whatever. So that makes him more of a minus than an Ariza, who you're not going to get him creating shots off the dribble and scoring 30 points a game.
Right.
You know, every once in a blue moon you will, but that's not going to be a regular thing. But because he knows that and he, like, sticks within his limitations, that makes him more productive. I know more.
So, no. The reason I had a point. Okay. That's why I was saying, like, I'm not here just to troll.
Right.
The thing is, in the playoffs, it's about matchups.
Yeah.
So Minnesota will have this disadvantage of having sort of a question mark in Wiggins at the three, whereas Houston will know exactly what they're going to get out of Trevor Ariza. High-quality three-point shots, engaged defense, some element of rebounding, and some disruptive on-ball defense as well. But if you're Minnesota, like, you legitimately don't know what you're going to get from Andrew Wiggins. You have no idea if he's going to bust out completely an average 30
mm-hmm.
or if he's going to crab out an average 7. You legitimately don't know.
Right. So I'm trying to think of matchups here in terms of the starting lineup. If I'm Houston, I don't think I put Ariza on Andrew Wiggins. I think I stick Ariza on Butler. And then
I think that's better.
Chris Paul is going to be on Jeff Teague. So I guess, does Harden get Andrew Wiggins?
Why not?
Yeah.
Here's the thing. Harden is a good post defender.
Right.
Wiggins likes to score in the post.
Yeah.
It makes sense to try that thing out mm-hmm. because you don't have to guard Wiggins from outside.
Mm-hmm. Or, I mean, I guess you could do Ariza on Butler, PJ Tucker on Wiggins, and then shift Harden to Taj.
You could, but Taj will have, like, some advantage
to him. Right. He's got the size advantage, but do you think the Timberwolves would exploit that?
I think because Taj Gibson is underrated in terms of being able to create his own offense in the post.
That's true.
He's a really good post player. Mm-hmm. Like, that's one of the things that when Taj Gibson retires one day, nobody is going to talk about this. Like, he learned how to be a very functional back-to-the-basket player. Like, he has counters to his counters to his counters.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. I think that would be utilized. But the fact that we're sitting here legitimately talking about hiding Harden by having him guard Andrew Wiggins?
I know.
How's that going for you, Minnesota?
Yeah, I mean, I did a thing for FanSided this week where I wrote about the five biggest disappointments in the league, and in honor of you, I channeled you and had Andrew Wiggins' stagnation as one of my five.
I appreciate that. Yeah.
So it seems like...
Did you get fat? Like, because if you channeled me, you should have gained like 65 pounds at least.
No, thankfully, shout out to Turner Sports and Bleacher Report for having this stupid program where you get bonuses if you travel 7,000 steps a certain number of times per month. So I've been killing myself trying to do that so I can get very stupid prizes for my wife. So
that's nice though.
It's a true story. I got a Coachette set the past month, and I don't even know what a Coachette set is, but we'll have
I was just about to say what is that.
Yeah. It's like these little souffle dishes. It's stupid. I hate myself for it, but it was free, so I had to do it. But based on the tenor of this conversation, Ward, it sounds like we're both obviously picking the Rockets. How many games do you see this one going?
Four.
Ooh.
Now, yeah, look, normally I would say Butler would take a game.
Right.
But I know he just had 31 or you know, I think it was 31. But I don't trust that knee yet. I don't.
Yeah.
Especially in a tougher playoff atmosphere. And he, you know, Tips is going to start him on Harden.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so he's going to spend so much energy defensively. Yeah. I just don't think he has it. Like, Karl Anthony Towns might have a game in a losing effort where he drops like 45,
mm-hmm.
but that's about it.
I like that Butler was supposed to be on a minutes restriction Wednesday and then played 42 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
That is the Tom Thibodeau experience in one sentence. I picked Rockets in five, but a sweep would not surprise me at all. I don't think it goes more than five. I'd be very surprised if it goes more than five. Let's now move to what could have been the best first round series of these playoffs. But mm-hmm. I guess had Kawhi Leonard been healthy, the Spurs would not be the 7th seed. But the number 2 seed Warriors versus the number 7 seed Spurs. The Warriors won the season series 3-1. I mean, can we pour one out for our homies and lament how fun this series would have been if Kawhi were healthy and playing?
This might just be part of his plan.
I know. I've seen that on Twitter today. Like, people are saying he's going to like descend from the rafters like Sting. Like the music, the lights are all going to go out. There's going to be an Undertaker gong and then lightning strikes. Yeah.
Look, but Steve Kerr just said, you know, that they're planning for a series without Kawhi.
Yeah.
So that it would just be so hilarious for the Spurs to announce right before tip-off in game one, Kawhi's playing. Yeah.
I mean, no, that's also bullshit from Steve Kerr, by the way. He's absolutely planning. We're going to... His plan A is that Kawhi's not playing. But they sure as hell have a plan B, a contingency plan for if does come back.
Absolutely. So we should make a bet.
Okay.
Is it game one or game two that Sasa injures LaMarcus for the rest of the playoff?
Yeah. I'm going to say game two only because game one would just be too egregious. But yeah. It's a fair question. It's going to happen at some
obviously.
Point.
Obviously.
Yeah.
Yeah. So upper body or lower body injury is he going to inflict?
Definitely lower. That's his thing. Right? He clumsily goes for a rebound and falls and like buckles into LaMarcus' right knee. Guaranteed.
Usually I would agree, but I think because it's the Spurs, Sasa's probably going, you know, I've done the whole lower body thing before. I need to mix it up like just for my own sanity's sake. Sure. So he's probably going to hit him in the head really, really hard and give him a concussion.
I hear an orbital fracture could knock you out for a couple weeks.
That's definitely in play. Yeah. Maybe grab his shoulder real hard so it dislocates. Oh, something like that. Because I
the Kelly Olynyk?
Exactly. I think it's in the cards. So, you know, yeah. Maybe a kick in the back while nobody's watching. Something like that.
Until LaMarcus does inevitably meet the end of his season, thanks to Zaza. Yeah. Well, I mean, we have to talk about him because he did turn, his San Antonio tenure around this season. He was relatively disappointing the first two seasons. There was talk that he was unhappy. He might even want to trade in the offseason. He had that preseason heart-to-heart with Pop. Pop said, we've been using him wrong. They used him correctly this year. I mean, it's a fun what-if. What if Kawhi were healthy? Would LaMarcus have had the breakout season that he had? Or not breakout, because he was a multi-time All-Star before. But the resurgent season that he had? Or would he kind of shrink back into the sidekick role that he occupied the first 2 years? I mean, we'll never know the answer to that question. But now we look ahead to this Warriors matchup. And last year, as you mentioned, Bort, Zaza knocked out Kawhi in game one. Stepped on his foot, knocked him out for the series. So then the Spurs, again, needed LaMarcus Aldridge to be their number one option, and he just completely shrank for the moment. Like, Pop put him on blast and everything. It got very ugly. So we've seen him do this for the whole season now, where he's been the number one option. He's been great in that role, deserving All-Star. Do you think that carries over to the playoffs, or do you think it's going to be a repeat of last Western Conference Finals?
I think that carries over. Look, LaMarcus has proved before when he was with Portland that he could have major playoff games. I think he had back-to-back 40-point games against Houston a couple years back. So he even had a 40-point game in the playoffs as a Spur that first year, right? Against OKC?
I don't remember, but I'll believe it. Sure.
Yes, he had a huge game. So I think he's pretty accommodating he's pretty acclimated. Yep. There we go. Mm-hmm. Acclimated to the playoffs. And the fact that I've looked at LaMarcus's shot distance average, which went down by 2 feet from last year to this year.
Oh, interesting.
And it's just evident that he's just taking so much more shots near the basket than before. Mm-hmm. Like last year, almost a third of his shots came from beyond 16 feet. This year, just under 19%.
Wow.
So Pop just basically moved him towards the basket.
Yeah.
And allowed him to take a lot of mid-rangers, but just closer mid-rangers.
Mm-hmm. Right, because those are still his bread and butter. But yeah, I mean,
exactly.
He went from 38.7% on shots from 10 to 16 feet last year, now to 43.8% this year. The longer range twos were slightly more efficient than they were last year. But as you said, he's just taking a lot more of those shots close to the basket. Right. See, I made fun of our analysis earlier. That was actually good analysis. Good insight there, Mort.
Yeah.
I mean, that said, so I did these playoff power rankings of all the teams for FanSided. And like, it felt slanderous, but I had the Spurs 14th. I mean, outside of LaMarcus, like who is their second best player? Like Rudy Gay? DeJounte Murray?
DeJounte or Rudy Gay.
Or Manu? Is it Manu?
Oh, God, it shouldn't be. You know what I mean?
Right. I literally wrote, no playoff team should rely on a 40-year-old to be a major contributor. But
he might be. Yeah, he might be. Danny Green has to be in the mix as well.
Yeah.
Can we talk about, by the way, how Patty Mills has been kind of disappointing?
Yeah.
I was expecting a little bit more.
Me too.
Like, he's been given so many opportunities to just take over, more or less, because look at what they've been playing with all year long.
Mm-hmm.
At 10-point average in 26 minutes,
yeah.
I kind of figured he would go off a little bit more, especially, he's in his prime.
Right.
So,
And they're going to need that. I mean, that's the overall point, is, even if LaMarcus... shit, even if he averages 30 a game, where are the other 70 points coming from?
Right.
And I don't know the answer to that question.
I will say, I was pretty wrong about one thing, and it's pretty unfortunate that I was, because that would have helped him a lot. I said before the season that Joffrey LaVerne would probably turn into a 45% three-point shooter for the Spurs. He did not hit a three this year, so that's... that did not happen.
Close. Very close.
Went 0 for 5.
Yeah.
But I still think he has that potential, but that's a different talk for a different day. If he had turned into a three-point gunner, that would have helped them so much.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I don't mean to disrespect the Spurs, because even in the last month, they've beaten New Orleans, Minnesota, Golden State with all their guys hurt, so I almost want to throw that out. They beat Utah, they beat Houston, they beat Portland. They have the talent to beat teams. A lot of it really is just LaMarcus Aldridge playing his mind out and Pop being Pop. That's a real thing. Popovich is going to win a game in the series pretty much by himself, because that's just what he does. But I just can't help but shake the feeling this is the worst roster in the playoffs right now without Kawhi Leonard. So going up, I know, Steph Curry's almost certainly going to miss the entire first round. I don't think it really matters.
Nope.
It hurts me to say it, but
yeah,
we saw how a Kawhi-less Spurs team did against the Warriors last year. So,
how many minutes do you think Rudy Gay is going to play? I have to assume more than the 21.5 he played in the regular season, right?
I would think so. I mean, Kyle Anderson could have a decently sized role. Who's going to stop Kevin Durant in this series? I have no idea. Is that on Anderson or is that on Rudy Gay?
Well, either way.
Right, R.I.P.
Slaughterhouse, yeah. Right. Exactly.
Right. It's just... I was legitimately, if the Jazz had fallen to 7 and gotten the Warriors in the first round, I would have at least toyed with picking the Jazz over the Warriors, because I think the Jazz are just that good. I think the Warriors could not have asked for a better first-round matchup while Curry recovers. This opened the door for them back to being the title favorites for me.
I would agree with that. Yep, I would agree with that. There's just no positive spin on it. I mean, without Kawhi, you're basically just hoping on the excellence of a coach and for 16 role players
right
to step up and do something that's not fair. LaMarcus Aldridge is not
a role player.
But you know what I mean, right? Yeah. They have one guy at this point and it's just not enough.
I mean, Manu is definitely gonna have one monster game, I have no doubt, but it's just, you know, the Warriors are vulnerable without Steph Curry. With him, they have a net rating around 15. Without him, it's around 3. So, they're not, the world-beating 73-win team that we have grown to know and hate over the last few years without Steph Curry. They could have very well lost to a Jazz team. Probably only the Jazz in the first couple of rounds. But, they were in danger. It's just, they got the perfect matchup for them, so they can just... how many games do you see this one going, Mort?
Five?
Okay. See, I'm going a clean sweep. I just
No,
don't.
because you just said something that I agree with, which is Bob is gonna lead them to one game.
Yeah, I mean it's entirely possible, but this one just feels like a talent wins out situation,
Yep.
and I just don't know where they're.
I mean, you could be right
Yeah,
easily, but
I hope I'm wrong. I don't want to, I feel bad doubting the Warriors, but it just, if you shut down LaMarcus especially, and Draymond Green is gonna give him some trouble, I think. This could get ugly
yeah.
very quickly.
I mean, I just want the Spurs to win one game so the last playoff series of Manu Ginobili and Tony Parker's
Oh,
careers
God damn it.
at least has a victory in it, you know?
Right, they get gentlemen swept out of their NBA careers, not just completely
Right.
swept.
Exactly. Just one win, preferably like a game four victory so
Right.
it's not a sweep.
That's
Like,
that
yeah.
is the pure gentleman sweep, yeah.
Exactly. So and preferably also like the Manu and Tony has they have big games for that night, and then
Right.
afterwards it's just like they float out of it, and then it's just a complete rebuild. Like, but little I mean, let's talk about it. Tony's on his final year of his contract and he's gonna be 36. Manu's 40.
I'm not enabling this conversation to the Bye Felicia segment. I'm sorry, Sarah. I didn't condone this. All right, let's move on. So the other two series, I mean, we're not expecting especially competitive series from the first two in the Western Conference. The other two, I think, are probably the two biggest coin flips in the first round in either conference. First, we have the number 3 seed Blazers versus the number 6 seed Pelicans. They split the season series 2-2. I mean, just in general, these teams seem to match up really well with one another, right?
Yeah, they do. Yep.
Like, I mean, Dame and CJ on one side, Jrue Holiday and Etuan Moore are nowhere near the scorers that those guys are, but defensively, that's an interesting matchup. I'm really excited for Yusuf Nurkic versus Anthony Davis, though. I think that might be the main attraction for me to this series.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think Davis just completely owns him,
Right.
but it's gonna at the very least, Nurkic has that mentality of I'm gonna get you back.
Yeah.
Like he doesn't have that back down mentality, and I think that's gonna help him a little bit. The vast majority of the responsibility obviously is Dame and CJ. I also like Alvaro Gamino's role in all this.
Yes.
Like he's fun. Like he was drafted as a small forward and just kind of turned his game around to become the small ball four. Now he's gonna go up against Mirotic, who's like a traditional, well, new age traditional power forward. Because when the Bulls used him at the three, it went horrifically. Like
Right.
he's a four through and
Yes.
through,
Yes.
and he's more of a spot up shooter, but he can create as well. So I'm gonna like I'm looking forward to seeing that dynamic at play. But yeah, and to your point earlier about Jrue and Etuan Moore, yeah, they're defensively inclined, but both can really score the ball when it's there. Like, what did Jrue end up with? Like a 19-point average more?
Nope. Flat 19.0.
Flat 19? That's
That's
good.
it
I
was
mean,
still his career high, I believe. Yeah, like
and
he
Etuan like had a couple good games down the stretch of the season as well. Like, yeah.
Yeah, Jrue, I mean, it went under the radar because Brown and Boogie just dominated headlines for so long. But like Jrue had, if not his best NBA season, I mean, depending on which metrics you use, he either had his best season or one of his best ones. Like he was never more valuable in terms of value over replacement player, second best in terms of box plus minus. He's been in like the neighborhood of 17 or 18 or 19 in PER for like the last 6 years. So he was right back in there again. But I mean, a phenomenal season all around from Jrue in the first year of that massive contract he signed. And then yeah, Etuan, he's frisky, man. He had a 30-pointer against Memphis. I mean, it's Memphis, but like he had 7 threes that game. I mean, he
He
can
can
get
shoot.
yeah, he can get very hot. And it's not, I mean, Dame and CJ are like they are better than Drew and Etuan offensively, but I like they're not gonna necessarily match up well defensively against those guys. Like if those guys get hot, that's gonna swing things in New Orleans' favor, I would say.
Oh, you're going there. Yeah, I mean, oh, you have me thinking now. I'm not ready. I'm not ready to go that far yet. I'm really not. But I get your point, and I also get that AD can flip a series.
Mm-hmm. Playoff Rondo. Playoff Rondo is a thing.
Oh, God. Playoff Rondo. That's the one thing I just don't want to hear more about.
Yeah.
God. But, yeah. I mean, theoretically, it's definitely possible. I think it comes down to Nico.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Like, if Nico goes on one of those stretches where he just can't miss, yep, and he does,
mm-hmm,
yeah, I would say that the odds swing pretty significantly.
Yeah.
He's so hot and cold, it's really hard to get a read on Nico. So if he just spots up all the time and the ball is long, it's he's either hot or the ball is long. It's, mm-hmm, either or.
Because right.
I've watched him for so long. I know his rhythm, like the way that he does things, and it's either or. He's gonna keep shooting regardless, which can be a problem on occasion. But sometimes he kind of snaps out of it, mm-hmm, by shooting. So he's weird, and you need the good weird,
yeah,
for this series to be a thing. If right. he comes out chucking and nothing's falling, ooh, that opens the door for like a 5-game series.
Yeah, I mean, to your point, he in Chicago this year in 25 games, he shot almost 43% from three-point range. In 30 games with the Pelicans, 33.5%.
Mm-hmm.
That said, he still led the team in terms of three-point makes per game at 2.2, not counting Boogie, who was also at that same rate. So, I mean, yeah, he's...
Pouring out a 40 for Boogie.
I know. Oh, man. Yeah, if the Pelicans had Boogie in this series, I
would, oh my god, yeah,
I think I'd pretty confidently pick them. The fact that they don't, it makes it more of a toss up. But you're totally right. I think Mirotić is like the bellwether. If he's hot, it's gonna more likely head to New Orleans. And if they, Aminu, I mean, you're right. I think he's gonna be an enormous X factor as well in terms of his versatility defensively is going to be huge. Another guy I want to bring up is Mo Harkless, because he went out, I think, at the end of March, and he had underwent some minor procedure to remove, I think, loose bodies in his left knee, I want to say. Mm-hmm. He was going to be out 2 to 3 weeks. They haven't said exactly when he's coming back, but I think I saw something earlier that said middle of next week, most likely, if not earlier. So,
yeah.
Figure he probably misses games 1 and 2, but he should be back at some point in the series. I ask this because since he went down, Portland was 4-5 to close out the season. They had the big win over Utah on the final night of the regular season, which clinched them the 3 seed. But aside from that, they had some really, like, truly bad losses in the last couple weeks. I believe they lost to Memphis 108-103. Dallas 115-109. And then, like, yeah, they lost to Houston, San Antonio, Denver. Those are excusable. But it makes me a little nervous that, like, Mo Harkless doesn't get much credit because he's not a high-volume scorer by any means. But that stretch of the season where Portland really started to put things together, you know, coming out of the All-Star break, Harkless played a big role in that. So it does make me wonder if they're going to feel his absence in this series. Then again, New Orleans' wing situation is, as we've said all season, is an outright disaster. So maybe it won't be that big of a deal.
Well, no, because in his place, Portland started Evan Turner.
Mm-hmm.
When he's in, he needs the ball.
Yeah.
And I just think that mucks things up. Like, yeah, he needs to come off the bench and be the primary ball handler off the bench. So... because when he's with Dame and CJ, there's just not enough touches to go around.
Right.
And that's the primary issue. So, yeah, they are missing Mo Harkless. And, you know, Harkless is sort of a early-stage Trevor Ariza clone.
Mm.
which is valuable in its own right. I mean, hell, he shot 41% from downtown, but on low volume. Mm-hmm. Having said that, teams know that he can hit the three, so they look at it.
Right.
Like, he's not left alone.
Yeah.
And yeah, like, he's got a role. I still think he underperformed.
Well, Harkless, yeah. Oh, absolutely.
I mean, he's a lot better than what he's shown this year.
Right.
But that alone is a thing, because everyone knows he's got significant talent. Like, he's pretty athletic. The mm-hmm. fact that he's starting to learn how to shoot, I mean, he's slowly but surely putting some things together that could become ultimately a nice package.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think teams are aware of that. With Evan Turner, you kind of know what you're getting. You're getting not a whole lot of three-point shooting.
Mm-hmm.
You're getting a lot of ball handling. You're getting some pretty fine passing. Mm-hmm. You're getting some post-game. But you're getting old basketball, like old traditional basketball. Earlier today, as I was thinking about this series, I was thinking that you should really experiment with Evan Turner at the four.
Ooh.
Yeah. I think that would be interesting. Like, he's got some bulk. Like, he's strong.
Mm-hmm.
He's got a pretty developed post game.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is, in the NBA, the post up is being used to lure the defense in, so you can make passes. Like, right. It opens up passing lanes. And he's a damn fine passer. Evan Turner is.
No, he really is.
I would love to see what they could do with him playing a small ball four.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't start him there by any means. No, but yeah.
Like, a small ball forward coming off the bench, handling the ball, like, right. Sort of in a Draymond way.
That's an interesting idea. I haven't really thought of him like that before, but I could see him operating well. And I mean, he's not Draymond Green on either side of the court. But a poor man's version of that, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, like a discount version, obviously. But right. I mean, look, right. He's shooting the three ball better than Draymond.
That's a very low bar this year.
Yeah, it is. But I'm just saying, like, and he's also got this all-around kind of game like Draymond. Yeah. Like, mm-hmm. He can board, he can pass, yep. He can initiate. He's not a bad defender.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, it would definitely be, like, the $1 store version. But,
yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think the good thing about this series is that, A, I mean, I think it's going to be one of the more competitive series in the playoffs, but B, it's not like a Houston, Minnesota, or a Toronto, Washington, where, like, one team is just so deep and the other team not so much. Like, both of these teams are pretty shallow. I think we're going to see, very tight rotations from both sides.
Oh, yeah.
And we're going to see Anthony Davis playing 40 minutes a game, Drew Holiday playing 40 minutes a game, Damon CJ playing 40 minutes a game. Like, there's going to be a lot of star power on the court for a grand majority of this series.
Mm-hmm. Yep, I would agree. And hopefully, this is the biggest takeaway for me, or the biggest hope that I have going into this series. Please let Anthony Davis not get hurt by playing a lot of minutes.
I know.
Yeah, I have this in the back of my mind every time I look at a box score with Anthony Davis,
right,
and he's played like more than 38 minutes or something. I'm just like, playing with fire.
Yeah. Well, I mean, also, if you follow, like, anytime there's a Pelicans game going on, and I'm on Twitter just watching that while I'm watching another game, I feel like at least once a week he goes back to the locker room with like some minor bump or bruise. Like, he always comes back this year, but it's always like, Anthony Davis rib questionable to return. Went to the locker room, and it's like, not again. And I wonder if there's a Pelicans blogger out there who's counted the number of not again times that we've had this year with Anthony Davis.
That would be great. Yeah. Now do Pelican bloggers even exist?
Mason Ginsburg. That's
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah, but fair point otherwise. All right, Mort, so who do you have in this series?
Blazers in six.
I really want to take the Pelicans.
Yeah, I get that.
I really do, and I'm trying to talk myself into it. Adam from All of Bleacher Report did a round-by-round prediction that went up today, and he did pick the Pelicans, and he made a convincing case for them. I'm leading Blazers in seven, but I don't feel good about it. I think part of it is just because I was so irrationally low on the Blazers coming into the season that I feel like I owe them. That like I need to stop underestimating them. They are actually a good team. And again, when they get Harkless back, I guess it really depends on how long Harkless is out, but I think he's gonna be back relatively early. So with that in mind, if he comes back, let's say if he doesn't miss three or more games, or yeah, then I'll do the Blazers. But if he misses the whole first round, I would take the Pelicans.
That's fair. Yeah, I could get behind that. Yeah.
All right, let's wrap things up then with the number four Thunder versus the number five Jazz. It's just hilarious that after this whole season, the Thunder ended up pretty much exactly where we thought they would. Like, most of us had them as the four seed, but even coming into like the final 2 weeks, did you think there was any chance they would actually be the four seed?
Nope.
Me neither. So, shout out to the Thunder for making us all look smarter than we actually were 2 weeks ago. We need to talk about the Jazz, though, because they have been really fucking good since Rudy Gobert came back in mid-January. Like, I feel like it's somehow slipped under the radar. And, like, there is a holy war going on between Sixers fans and Jazz fans right now, so I don't want to give them too much props. But I mean, they've been unbelievable. They have the league's best net rating at plus 10.8. They have the league's best best defensive rating over that span. I think it was like 90, what was it? 97.5. And then the second best record, 30-8, only behind the Houston Rockets. Like, what, the Sixers are getting all this love because they were 31-10 since the time Gobert came back. The Jazz have a better record than them. Like, the Jazz have been unstoppable for the last couple of weeks or months. And I mean, they've pulverized, absolutely pulverized the Warriors a couple times. Like, I think they had, since Gobert came back, I want to double check. I think they've only had three losses. Yeah, only three losses by 10 or more points.
I can tell you why.
Why is that?
So, the Jazz allow the fewest assists, the fewest rebounds, the fewest points, and the third fewest three-pointers attempted per game.
That would do it.
That's how you win basketball games.
Yeah. I mean, right. I mean, that's kind of what I'm going at here. Like, there's the old adage of like defense wins championships, and as the Cavs proved a couple of years ago, it's not always true. But
Correct.
like I think, they're obviously the Jazz will need to keep up with OKC offensively, but like their defense is going to keep them in any game. And it's going to win them at least one or two of them, but it will keep, like, they are not going to get blown out of this series by any means.
No. I mean, look, they're going up against Russell Westbrook,
Yeah.
who is, shall we say, not the cleverest shot taker in the NBA.
His shot selection often leaves something to be desired. I think that is fair
Right.
to say.
So put that into perspective and, add the disciplined defense of Utah into the mix, then suddenly OKC looks pretty inefficient. And then you have Melo just spotting up all the time and not really converting at the rate that we thought he would. And everything will be left up to Paul George to lift up the efficiency. That's a problem.
I mean, to OKC's credit, they did go, I believe they went 3-1 against Utah during the regular season. Again, don't want to put too much stock into regular season results, especially because all of those games came pretty early in the year, actually. All of them were before January 1st. So Gobert missed, I think, at least two of them, if not three. So,
And that was before, you know, Mitchell got better and better and better and better and better and better. So, yeah.
Right. I mean,
obviously, that's a different team.
Yeah. I'm not putting all that much stock into it, but just worth noting. But, and you know, so they... OKC does have Steven Adams, who at least... He's one of the rare guys who can at least hold his own against Gobert, in theory.
Yeah, physically.
Right. Yeah, physically. But... I mean, yeah, you said it. Like, Russ going against Gobert, Carmelo going against Gobert. I just feel like we're in line for, like, OKC to shoot 38% from this series.
Yeah. I think you're right. Yeah. Look, I mean, Westbrook on the season just took a nosedive on the three ball.
Mm-hmm.
29.8%. He even somehow managed to shoot just 73.7% from the free throw line. He's been just a shadow of himself from an efficiency standpoint, so he's not going to help in that department.
Yep.
Melo is just old now. I mean, we talked about that before. I mean, it took him 15 shots a game to score 16 points.
Yep. I think that's the lowest ever from him.
Yep, it is. And I think lately the team has just been so focused on Westbrook's triple double hunt
right.
that they, well, I mean, we laugh at it, but did you see how much Steven Adams should get like an honorary you know award for helping him achieve that, because so many times he just boxes out and like looks at Russ like, come go get it, go get your stats,
right?
And I just don't think that's the best practice to use, even to accomplish a goal. I don't think that's what you do when you have to go into the playoffs looking for a serious series.
Yeah,
I don't think that's the play. And I reckon they're going to come in pretty unfocused and maybe believing, you know, their own hype a little bit. Oh, I'm a triple-double man for the second year in a row. Paul George going, oh, I'm going to get DPOY votes, and I shoot 40% from three. Melo keep thinking he's prime Melo. Right. I just think this team has some sort of ability to shoot themselves in the foot.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. It's a testament to Utah, because I think they have the personnel. Like, Ricky Rubio is not going to go stat for stat with Westbrook. Westbrook is going to put up more points, more rebounds, most likely more assists than Ricky Rubio. But Rubio is a good defender. Like, he's going to make life difficult on Westbrook, and we're going to get some, like, 8 of 25 shooting nights from him. Paul George is an incredible two-way player. Joe Ingles is going to make life tough on him. And Jay Crowder, they're going to make life difficult on him, I think. Mm-hmm. I mean, I could be wrong. Maybe George just goes off for 30 points a night and on 60% shooting, and I look like an idiot. But
like, no, Ingles is a good defender. Like, we don't talk about that enough. He's a good defender. And I think there's this idea that, oh, a white Australian boy,
right,
like who can shoot, oh, he's got to be just a shooter. No, dude can defend his ass off.
Yeah,
absolutely. So I think that's a very fair point. Him and Crowder rotating on Paul George, yeah, that's not going to be easy.
No, right. And then you got your boy, Donnie Mitchell. What do you expect from him out of this series?
Points. Look, I mean...
Bold.
And... yeah, no, look, so many people are crapping on Mitchell these days, like calling him a chugger and a gunner, and I'm just like, no, that's the role he's given,
right?
Like, he's being asked to take these 17 shots a game. Like, that's his role. His role is just to go out there and get buckets, and I don't think that role is gonna change.
Yeah,
he's gonna come out there and just try to score however many points that he's going to try to get. 24, 25 a night doesn't sound too unrealistic, and which is pretty good for a rookie, I might add. But the backbone of it all is the defense. That's still the defense. I'm just hoping for Utah's sake that they somehow internally find a secondary scorer who's capable of being that secondary scorer, because right now, who's the second guy? That's Gobert, and you could argue Ricky Rubio, but none of those guys are natural scorers.
Right.
They can't really create their own shots. They have to be set up. Joe Ingles spots up a lot. It's not really, like, he can handle the ball, he can pass, he's a really wonderful passer, but he's not a guy who's going to create 10 shots per game for his own accord.
Yeah.
So you need that secondary guy. And who's that? I mean, look at that roster.
Yeah.
Like Alec Burks? I mean...
Yeah, like Derek Favors? No.
No, yeah, right? I mean...
None of those guys... You're right. None of them can create for themselves outside of Rubio. So Rubio's going to have to play an enormous role, especially considering he's going to be defending Russell Westbrook, and that's going to take a lot of energy out on his end. If you're OKC, how quickly do you put Paul George on Donovan Mitchell defensively?
I start with it.
Yeah.
I open up with it.
Me too.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, because like you can hide Corey Brewer on Ingles.
Yeah.
I mean...
Yeah, and he's pesky off the ball, like Brewer is. So that would be pretty good, actually. But you start Paul George on Donovan Mitchell immediately.
Yeah, 100% agree there. I think this one's going to be interesting, too, because... Again, neither team, like, I guess Utah is somewhat deep, but not especially. And OKC, it's like they're starting five. They are definitely a team that's going to be playing all five of their guys a huge number of minutes. Apparently, by the way, Corey Brewer, he left, I believe, Wednesday's game with an injury, but he should be okay. I saw that he's going to be starting game one, so no concerns there.
Yeah.
But yeah, so who do you have as X factors in this series?
Dante Exum.
Yes, damn it.
Yeah.
Damn it. Yep. Fine, Bort, steal my glory.
I know. he's been playing well for 14 games that he's been back.
Yep.
Not quite ready to say he's going to live up to that potential of his, but he's at least getting a little bit closer.
Mm-hmm.
So what is he now? 22. He's going to turn 23 this July. So yeah, he's starting to like be at that point now where he can create a little bit from his himself and like use his talent, and he's becoming a little bit more aggressive.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not ready to say that he could be the secondary scorer behind Mitchell,
mm-hmm.
but I'm also not saying that he can't be a significant offensive piece of the puzzle in Utah. Like, he's averaging 8 points in just under 17 minutes a game. Granted, 14-game sample size is not great. It's not fantastic. But it's enough for at least to say, oh, we might get some more production out of that position off the bench.
Right.
And that would be huge.
Yeah, if nothing else, it gives them another creator. It reminds me of, like, the surge that Markel Fultz has provided the Sixers off the bench. Like, having a guy who can both create his own shot and for others really does. It provides a big lift. And, you know, Exum, my expectations are lower for Exum than they are for Fultz. Not that they're extremely high for Fultz this playoffs either, but I don't think either guy is going to, like, have a 30-point game or do anything wild like that. But, you know, there is value in salvaging those minutes whenever you do have to turn your reserves for a couple of minutes and like making sure the other team doesn't go on a 10-0 run and wipe out all the good that your starters did. So yeah, I think Exum is an awesome pick for an X factor. I'm going to Crowder as well. I mean, you know, he just hasn't been the same Jay Crowder from Boston, but Ingles can't do it all against Paul George. They're going to need to shut down Paul George if they're going to win this series. So I expect him to have a big role there. I mean, hell, I could even see him marking Westbrook at times. Yeah, I mean, Utah is going to have no shortage of options defensively. I mean, Exum is going to get some Westbrook duty too, I would assume.
Yeah, and for Exum, sure.
Like, Exum has the size to do it, yeah.
He's got the size to really buck him. So, yeah. I mean, Utah can throw defenders at you all day long.
Right.
The problem is, and they have the reverse problem that Chicago did a couple years ago. Like, they have too many defenders solely. Like, in today's game, you need two-way players.
Yeah.
And Chicago, you know, a couple years ago, loaded up on shooters and offensive-minded players and just did not consider, we need guys who play both sides of the ball.
Right.
And Utah went the complete different direction and just went all defensive.
Yeah.
Now Donovan Mitchell is in there scoring 20.5 points a game. That's breathing a sigh of relief, mm-hmm. from Utah's organization, because now they finally have a scorer, but that's so not enough. They need more.
Right.
This summer is going to be interesting, because when Utah is getting bounced, which I think is going to be in the second round, mm-hmm. I could imagine, they're going to look internally and go, you know, what do we need to fix here? And offense is the big thing.
Yeah.
They need shot creators. I mean, as much as I love this team, because I love watching defense,
mm-hmm.
and they sure as hell provide a lot of it, there are just so many times where you can sense that the energy offensively is just not there. Yeah. There's no rhythm. There's no chemistry. The shot creation is just a bother, and you look at Donovan Mitchell going, oh my god, I have to do this again.
Right.
I just, like, I have two straight possessions, I have to break down the entire defense and get to the rack, and now I have to do it again because no one really wants to do anything right now.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's unfortunate.
It's funny, because if Andre Roberson were healthy, I definitely would change my pick in this series. But I don't even know if it would be as close as I'm otherwise expecting this thing to be. Like, because then they would have Roberson and Paul George, who can both mark Mitchell.
Right.
And that would probably be game over for Utah. But the fact they don't have that. So, I think you gave it away by saying you expect Utah out in the second round. But how many games do you expect this one to go?
7. I think it goes a full 7. And it wouldn't surprise me if they're bounced. But
yeah.
But okay, here's the thing with me, though. I don't have that much trust in Russell Westbrook.
Yeah, I have Utah in 6. I'm surprised. Like, I saw the Thunder are favored in the series, and I guess maybe because it's home court advantage, but, like, what about the Jazz in the last 3 months? I mean, again, if the Jazz were the 7th seed, I would strongly consider them picking them against the Steph Curry-less Warriors. That's how good I think they've been lately. So... yeah,
I don't know if I'll go that far, but I would definitely say that they could, you know, take it to a game 6 or 7.
Yeah, I mean, I don't get it. I just don't get it. I guess the home court advantage is the reason they're favored, or is the reason OKC is favored. But otherwise, I feel like Utah's, like, I said this, I think, in the Eastern Conference pod about Washington. The Wizards, I could see them going on like an absolute tear and, you know, knocking out Toronto in the first round, Cleveland in the second round. Like, they have the potential on paper to go to the finals, but they're just so damn inconsistent. Like, their ceiling is so high, but their floor is so low, and you just don't know which one you're going to get. That's how I feel about OKC too. Like, if OKC's starting 5 plays as well as they're capable of doing, Utah's toast. But I have more faith in Utah bringing the same type of consistency every night than I do OKC.
And that's because defensive consistency is honestly easier to bring than offensive consistency.
Yeah.
Like, you're going to miss shots, and you can be cold tonight, and that's, you know, that's what it is. But being cold defensively, that's not putting in an effort. That's a choice.
Mm-hmm.
So... I mean, you can play the most perfect defense in the world. You can still get killed if the opponent is making tough shots, but you live with that.
Right.
So Utah has a stronger foundation to fall back on.
Yeah.
I would agree with that.
That's a good way of phrasing it. Good. Well done. Well done all around. Yeah. All right, Mort. That's going to wrap it up for our playoff previews. Stay tuned to us throughout the playoffs. We're going to have a lot of breakdowns of games and previews of each round as those unfold over the coming weeks. In the meantime, please follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bio. So follow us. You can flame my mentions when the Sixers inevitably drop game 1 on Saturday. Please follow us on iTunes as well. You can subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews. We would love any feedback. And we're being hosted now on the Almighty Baller Podcast Network. So follow them at Almighty Casts. Until next time, I'm Brian Toporek, and I was joined, as always, by Morten Jensen. Have a good one, Mort.
You too, Brian. I look forward to seeing the final steps on the journey of Manu Ginobili and Tony Parker.
God damn it. I'm so sorry, Sarah.